Hello there and welcome. I'm James. I'm the pastor of the Glenwood Moravian Community Church here in Madison, Wisconsin. And this is The Essentials. It's our podcast to discuss and explore our faith, to ask questions, and to celebrate good news and hope that we see out there in the world. We have made it through Easter. This will be our message and our lesson from Easter Sunday. It's April here in Wisconsin, and we are getting snow and sleet and slush. It is just wonderful. I hope that you are doing well. Hope you had a good Easter celebration and that spring has been more positive for you. So, our lessons for Easter, the first one came from Mark chapter 16, verses 1 through 8. This is Mark's story of the resurrection. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so they could embalm him. Very early on Sunday morning, as the sun rose, they went to the tomb. They worried out loud to each other, "Who will roll back the stone from the tomb for us?" When they looked up, they saw that it had been rolled back. It was a huge stone, and they walked right in. They saw a young man sitting on the right side, dressed all in white. They were completely taken aback, astonished. He said, "Don't be afraid. I know you're looking for Jesus the Nazarene, the one they nailed on the cross. He's been raised up. He's here no longer. You can see for yourselves the place is empty. Now, on your way, tell his disciples and Peter that he's going on ahead of you to Galilee. You'll see him there, exactly as he said." They got out as fast as they could, beside themselves, their heads swimming. Stunned, they said nothing to anyone. Our second reading was from the book of Acts, chapter 10, verses 34 through 43. Peter fairly exploded with his good news. "It's God's own truth. Nothing could be plainer. God plays no favorites. It makes no difference who you are or where you're from. If you want God and are ready to do as he says, the door is open." The message he sent to the children of Israel, that through Jesus Christ, everything is being put together again. Well, he's doing it everywhere, among everyone. Jesus Christ. You know the story of what happened in Judea. It began in Galilee after John preached a total life change. Then Jesus arrived from Nazareth, appointed by God with the Holy Spirit, ready for action. He went through the country helping people and healing everyone who was brought down by the devil. He was able to do all this because God was with him. And we saw it all, everything he did in the land of the Jews and in Jerusalem, where they killed him, hung him on a cross. But in 3 days, God had him up, alive, and out there where he could be seen. Not everyone saw him. He wasn't put on public display. Witnesses had been carefully handpicked by God beforehand. Us. We were the ones there to eat and drink with him after he came back from the dead. He commissioned us to announce this in public, to bear solemn witness that he is, in fact, the one whom God destined as the judge of the living and the dead. But we're not alone in this. Our witness that he is the means to the forgiveness of sins is backed up by the witness of all the prophets. Here ends the reading of our word. I want to back up to that passage from the Gospel of Mark's story of the empty tomb. Because it may have sounded a little different to you. It might not sound like the Easter story that you're familiar with. So those verses 1 through 8 conclude with this, with the man in the tomb saying, "He's here no longer. You can see for yourselves that the place is empty. Now on your way, tell his disciples and Peter he is going on ahead of you to Galilee. You'll see him there exactly as he said." They got out as fast as they could, beside themselves, their heads swimming. Stunned, They said nothing to anyone. Now that was the original ending to Mark's gospel, those verses that we just heard. It ends with an empty tomb, a promise that Jesus is ahead of his disciples in Galilee, and the women leave the scene in a rush, terrified of what has just taken place. Jesus doesn't appear at all in Mark's story. Not to Mary by the tomb, not to the disciples. It ends right there. But in the second century, a second ending was included to Mark's gospel that seems to bring in some resurrection stories from the other three gospels. The risen Jesus appears to Mary much like in John. He appears to two disciples on the road, like he does on the way to Emmaus in Luke. And there's a bit about Jesus telling his disciples to proclaim the good news to the world, much like the Great Commission in Matthew. And it seems like those three pieces were added to Mark's gospel because the early audience wasn't at all satisfied with how he ended things. It was too abrupt to see an empty tomb, to have the women flee in fear. It lacks the comfort of those accounts of people seeing the risen Lord. So the early church leaders added to Mark's story. They didn't want his message about the good news to end with a cliffhanger, not knowing what happens next. It's rare to fully experience a cliffhanger these days, to genuinely feel like we're on the edge of our seat, not knowing what will follow. Because we can binge watch most TV shows, so if one season ends in suspense, we have to wait a matter of seconds before we can start the next. Now and then, a complete series will end wondering where the story goes. The show The Sopranos famously cut to black mid-scene as the final stop for the show. And fans have had to come to their own conclusions about the fate of the main character. And depending on your view, it's either the best ending ever or the worst ending ever. And yeah, it keeps people talking. It can create buzz and excitement. But you can't shake that deeply unsatisfying feeling when something's left unresolved. It just doesn't sit well with us as we're pondering those potential outcomes, wrestling with the fact that we will just never know for sure. We face these uncertainties in our real lives as well, not knowing what comes next. As a chaplain, I spoke with some people just once while they were in the hospital. As they recovered from surgery or were hoping to heal from a fall for an accident, they'd share what they wanted to do when they got home. And sometimes the life event that brought them in had given them a new perspective or reshaped their outlook on life. They were going to get better, exercise more, take care of themselves. They're going to get better and look for a different job. Or they were going to get home and get out of a troubling situation or relationship that they were in. Each of those conversations was a little cliffhanger. I'd share my hopes for them. I would certainly wish them the best. But I haven't the slightest clue how things turned out. Were they true to their word? Did they make that change in their life? Or did those old habits and patterns take over once again? I had to get used to that feeling of never knowing how life unfolded for them after they left the hospital. And sometimes, just not knowing the outcome ahead of time, knowing that the end result is out of your sight, it can impact what we do in the present time. I ran into this on one of my first days of seminary. I lived about a mile from campus in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, so I walked to class often, and my path to school went right through the humble main street of the city. And I quickly learned that on most days, you could cross paths with people who were homeless or dealing with severe poverty. And this wasn't something I saw really as a kid or had had to respond to in the past. So the first time I was walking to class with a friend and someone got in our way, stopped us to ask for money so they could buy a meal. I was thrown off and unsure of what to do. So we stumbled around our words, we made up some excuse, and we walked away awkwardly. And as we kept walking, we tried to recap what we had just done, what had just happened. We thought how we're a couple of broke grad students who can't afford to give money away to a stranger. And sure, that's what we said to make ourselves feel better. What we really decided was that we would feel much better about giving some money to that man if we could be certain that it was going to be put to good use. If we knew for sure that he would go get a sandwich and not feed an addiction or a bad habit, we would gladly give some money away. Which is a very privileged and judgmental view, I have to admit. But since there was that uncertainty involved, since we couldn't be sure of the outcome, we couldn't confidently go forward. And while we couldn't control what he would do with $10, he would have been free to use it, waste it. But he never got that chance because our uncertainty was simply too loud. And I wonder how Mark would feel about the edits to the end of his gospel because of the uncertainties that people had. About the fact that his audience was so uncomfortable not knowing more about the empty tomb, they had to include the outcome of the risen Jesus appearing in various ways. The people didn't think the promise of Jesus waiting ahead of us was good enough. We needed more evidence, we needed more proof. We'll only celebrate and believe if we see Jesus again. I think we still deal with that today, maybe even more so than when Mark wrote his gospel. It's not necessarily a cliffhanger, but people struggle to come to faith because they just can't be sure. People are intrigued by Jesus. They like his teachings, but they're overwhelmed with the questions and the uncertainties. They don't know with absolute confidence what lies ahead. And they'll say that we hear his story only because it's been passed down for 2,000 years. Our faith relies on the experiences that other people have. We didn't get to walk with Jesus. He didn't appear to us after his resurrection. It's testimony in a book written ages ago. And that's not enough for many people. Feels unfinished, feels unresolved because it hasn't happened directly to them. They haven't seen the end of the story for themselves with their own eyes, and they're left to wonder. And wonder can turn into doubt, and doubt often turns into disbelief. But that's where we come in to help finish the story. We can make the truth of the empty tomb become real in people's lives. We can be the proof that they're asking for, to show them how Jesus defeating the grave has entered into our hearts and changed the way we view this life. So when we pour out our love, when we celebrate hope and light, even in the darkest places, when we claim with certainty that we are forgiven and embraced, then the story of Jesus means something more. He's alive here and now. And when we live out our faith, we make him tangible for the people who feel like at best they can do is wonder about him. What Mark leaves with a cliffhanger and a promise, we turn into a reality. That Christ is alive, and not only that, he is out ahead of us, waiting to serve and love with us. And that's the good news that people are longing to hear And we need to be the evidence that people are hoping to see. So we're called to share this message, to be the answer to the questions that people have, to help their disbelief by bringing the expansive love of Christ to them. The pain of this world and death, it had no power over Jesus. And we know that it doesn't have power over us either. That is good news for all people. And where they demand to see Jesus for themselves, we are sent to be the proof they need. He is alive. Amen. Thank you for listening to another episode here on The Essentials. If you want to learn more about the church that I serve, it's the Glenwood Moravian Community Church. Check out our website. Find us on Facebook. Worship with us on YouTube. If you want to know more about Moravians in general, head to moravian.org. Take care. Be well. I'll catch you next time.